It's tax season. Time to call RSG Accounting Services for your tax service needs. Call 412-742-4345. That's 412-742-4345. RSG Accounting Services provides accounting and tax service needs for business or personal. RSG Accounting Services wants to work for you and all your tax needs. Call us or email Mary Jo at RiversideSalesGroup.com. If you mention you heard this at Urban Media Today Radio, you'll receive a 10% discount. Riverside Sales Group LLC is proud to be an organization with minority ownership. RSG Accounting Services for all your tax needs. Call today, 412-742-4345.
Soul Tape. Champions Live is the name. Talking sports is our game. Welcome to Urban Media Today Radio. I'm your co-host, Bill Neal, along with Kevin Cameron. It is Soul Take, Champions Live sports talk show. Mixing it up color-wise today. Got one of the blue-eyed soul brothers in town, Totten, sitting with us talking basketball. It's Bill Neal, Kevin Cameron coming to you from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We've got a lot to talk to you all about, but as always, we appreciate you tuning in. Trev's on the wheel of steel, keeping everything in order. And whatever I say, you can pretty much take to the bank. Whatever Kevin gives you, you got to wait a little bit. But then don't be too quick.
Take it to the bank.
Well, it's on. You know, sometimes the bank is closed.
Take it to
sometimes
the bank.
Sometimes the bank is closed.
This is good.
Now you've given me a schedule over here. We'll get to this in a minute. But I can tell you right now, in the West you put in Golden State, and in the East you put in Toronto, and it's a done deal. So we'll get back to that. But let me introduce. Kevin Cameron is the orchestrator and co-host of this fine show, and while I tease him considerably, he does come with some serious credentials. Aliquippa native, wow. Aliquippa athlete, and military athlete. Got some military background, so he's been around the block a few times. Nothing new that he hasn't seen or experienced. Kev, how's things?
Everything is good. Hey, NBA playoffs is off and running.
Finally. Yeah,
finally.
So, you know, we got to talk a little bit of Pirates.
Nice.
And,
I'm ready.
NFL draft is coming up next
NFL
week.
NFL draft.
We can touch on that just a little bit. But let's introduce to our listeners our special guest today. And he truly is special, at least to me. You know, when you meet someone... and D, you might echo this. Whenever you and I connect, it's like we've seen each other every day, right?
Absolutely.
But this is a former Pitt basketball star, Darren Morningstar, D Star, I call him. As great a guy as he was, player, and I say was respectively, D, because you retired, and I'm sure the skills have eroded a little bit. So, yeah, you were a great player then. You're probably just settled down to a good player now.
I think the skills might be there a little bit, but
you
the
still
weight
playing?
But the weight's about 80 pounds heavier
well,
than
that might
I was,
get in the
so
way.
That might get in the way a little.
Well, surprisingly, you played 6'10", 235, 240. That, I mean, you were in great shape. And let's you know, remind our listeners in case they forget, drafted by the Boston Celtics in 1992 out of Pitt University. You started your college career at Navy. We got to talk about how that happened. And you get to Pitt, and second round, 47th player taken in the second round. That's no small undertaking, my friend.
No, it was a dream come true for me. I always wanted to play in the NBA. And that's how I actually ended up at the University of Pittsburgh. I got recruited by a lot of Division I schools. It's kind of a long, windy story.
Well, let's go back to where it starts. What high school? Where'd you come from?
I'm from a small little town out in Washington State at a place called Stevenson High School in the Columbia River Gorge, about 45 minutes east of Portland, Oregon.
So you wanted to get away from home, apparently.
Yeah, I just wanted to get – I thought going east might be better, more people, more action. I was from such a small town. I just wanted a taste of something more.
Suffice to say, you were the biggest guy in town?
Oh yeah.
Okay, I would assume. All right, so you leave the small town and you head to the big city but you get the Navy first.
Yeah, I actually the biggest school that had offered me was Stanford. If you remember Mike Montgomery, he was the head coach of Montana and he was on me real hard and he ended up getting promoted to Stanford. And back then, it was one of those things where you get a letter in the mail and say, I'd like to offer you, but I had no idea. They offered me and two other guys with the same letter. And I don't know if you remember Adam Keefe, that played at Stanford. He was like a redhead, played in the NBA for about 10 years. He was with the Jazz a long
time. Yeah, I think I do. Yeah.
He called them a day before me and committed. And so when that happened, I had always wanted to play in the Pac-10, and there was an old guy by the name of Marv Harshman that used to coach at the University of Washington, and he was ready to offer me, but he retired. So the new guy that came in wanted me to come in just to walk on. I was like, no, I'm not doing that. I had a lot of offers, and there was a gentleman on our AAU team at the time by the name of Ron Deaton that was getting recruited pretty heavily from the Naval Academy. And if you go back to 1987, that's when David Robinson was there. He just made that run to the Final Eight, beating Syracuse.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, I was just pretty naive, and I thought, you know, Navy was a place that was a basketball kind of like school, you know, if you will. And I had the grades, and I went on a recruiting visit, and he actually showed me around on that visit, Robinson.
So clearly your potential positioning in the Navy was not going to be submarine work.
No.
I mean, we knew that was taken off the table.
No.
So you'd be on top of a ship somewhere.
Yeah.
And but let me go back a second, because you kind of snuck Stanford in there. So you obviously had the GPA.
Yeah, I had the GPA, the grades, and I was getting recruited by a lot of academic schools. And my dream was still to play in the NBA. You know, I wanted to go first and foremost to a BCS school. But when that fell, I didn't have any BCS schools that offered me. They were all mid-majors.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went on the visit to the Naval Academy, I was like, man, this is great academically. You know, it's really sought after, or, you know, the degree means a lot graduating from the academy. But the one little thing I forgot to factor in was the military part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea about that. Zero.
Never thought about
Zero.
The obligation, huh?
Right. So that really kind of shook me. I got there, and I was okay with the toughness part and the discipline, but that just wasn't a desire of mine at all. So once I'd been there for at least 6-7 months, made it through plebe summer, I'd actually had some big games there. The biggest game I had early on that year was at Iowa. We got beat pretty good, but I had 20 points and 11 rebounds, and then that's when I kind of got re-recruited
mm-hmm.
by BCS schools, and Pitt mm-hmm. was one of them.
So just for clarity, for those of us that don't know, if you sign to go to Navy, it's unlike going to
a civilian school.
Well, no, the other military schools where you're obligated for X amount of years.
No, the Naval Academy, Air Force, and West Point. I'm not sure about Air Force, but I know for sure at Naval Academy, West Point, once you've committed to 4 years to go to school there, you have to give them back 5 after that. So, like in the case of David Robinson, he was going to be the number one pick in the draft. Everyone kind of knew that going into his junior year.
Right.
And so they let him know, hey, Dave, if you decide to stay, we'll make that a little more, you know, a little better for you. Instead of 5, they made it 2 years. So, if you remember, San Antonio Spurs picked him with the number one pick. I can't remember what year it was. Well, it was probably like 1987, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah. And he had to serve 2 years in the fleet. So San Antonio had to sit on him for 2 years before he could
actually play. About that. Yeah, I forgot about that.
But if you
that.
Go back to, like, Roger Staubach, the famous one, he actually had to serve 5 years in the fleet before he was allowed to play in the NFL.
That's amazing. That's amazing stuff.
It is amazing.
To be able to come back and accomplish all the things that he did.
Yeah.
I think
Napoleon McCallum, remember him, the running back with the Raiders?
Yeah.
I think they might have given him the same deal as they gave David Robinson.
But my question really was, so when you left Pitt Navy for Pitt, so you're not forced to commit X amount of years once you sign to go into the school?
That's a great question, Bill. So in my case, as long as you make a decision before you start your junior year, you're okay.
Oh, okay.
So I left in January of my freshman year. So I'd made it a little past the halfway mark, and then was kind of like, guys, this is just not for me. I mean, I'm like a fish out of water here.
So let's talk, and Kev, feel free to jump in anytime. Let's talk about your arrival at Pitt, and, you know, we'll kick it back and forth from that to what's going on at Pitt now. But your arrival at Pitt at that time, talk about coming here, who was here, and what the expectations
were. So back to the Naval Academy, Paul Evans, if you remember.
I do remember Paul Evans.
Was the head coach at Pitt. And everyone in Pittsburgh thinks I followed Paul here. And that's not necessarily true. Paul had already left before they recruited me. So all the coaches that were there were hired by Paul. So Pete Herman was the head coach at the Naval Academy. I was there. There was a gentleman by the name of Emmett Davis and a few other guys there. So when I decided to leave, they were the ones kind of pushing me toward Paul and Pitt, saying, mm-hmm. hey, you know, this is a guy you want to look at. So when I got re-recruited, Vanderbilt, Virginia, and Pitt were the three that offered me. And what's funny is I actually visited Vanderbilt about a month before, and then about a week before Pitt, and that was the year Barry Goheen hit that shot against Pitt to knock us out, if you remember.
Yeah.
So I just met those guys on my visit.
Okay.
And C.M. Newton was the coach at Vanderbilt at the time. Okay. So when I came to Pitt, Bill, so my class in 87 coming out of high school was the same class as Brian Shorter, Bobby Martin, Sean Miller, Darrell Porter, Jason Matthews. And I'd actually played against Brian in AAUs down in Florida, so I knew he was a man-child. He was a McDonald's All-American.
Tough player.
His deal with us, when we played him in AAUs down in Florida, he had 32 points, and 14 of his field goals were dunks. Nope, there's no lie.
Yeah, Brian Shorter was a beast to be sure. Well, now, I just want to be reminded, too, second-round draft pick by the Celtics, and your expectations to be in the NBA were always there. So when you left Navy, came to Pitt, still had that expectation and saw that window opening wider at Pitt?
I don't know if it was an expectation, but it was a dream. I mean, you know, when I was at Navy, I always had confidence in my game, and then that showed out in that game against Iowa. And then when I came to Pittsburgh, really what really got me there, to be honest, is playing against Bobby Martin and Brian Shorter every day in practice. Mm-hmm. And then after that, if you remember, Eric Mobley and Chris McNeil.
Man.
So there was a lot of talent.
Yeah,
there was
a lot of talent.
Most of those guys were McDonald's Americans, so I was just fighting for my life to get playing time, to be honest. And then when it all kind of came to fruition, it was a dream come true. I kept working. Because you remember, Bill, you saw me out in your league.
Absolutely.
When I was probably 18, 19. I wasn't, you know, I was a long ways away from the league.
But here's where
but
you
I just
were.
Worked, you know what I mean? I just
but
worked.
Here's where you were. And Red Auerbach said it. I read a comment that he made that whatever you lack in talent, you more than make up in enthusiasm.
Right.
And a willingness to get it done. As a matter of fact, he said you gave 110% all the time.
Right.
And that enthusiasm that is still a part of you, as a matter of fact. If somebody sees you out and about, whenever I see you out and about, I can feel your energy. And you were a Connie Hawkins leaguer.
Yeah.
And it was great having you out there with us. And the reason I identified you as a blue-eyed soul brother, because as you remember, there weren't a whole lot of white guys playing in the Connie Hawkins League, but the guys that came and played, you know, enjoyed themselves, had no trouble, as you well know, and it went well. So let's just talk a little bit about Pitt, since you were there. Well, wrap that up for me. So how did the Pitt career end? Take us up.
So really, you know, if you remember Sean Miller, him and I became real good friends there, and Sean had a really bad Achilles injury. So it forced him to stay an extra year, which was good for me, because when you transfer, as you know, Division I and Division I, you have to sit a year.
Right.
So Brian and Bobby and those guys left, and in came Eric and Chris. And my senior year, it was just Sean and I as seniors. And actually what really helped me, you know, Tony Salisi, the trainer still at Pitt, he was trying to get Sean back ready to play with the Achilles.
Tony's about 100 years old, ain't he?
I know. He's been around forever. So I was living with Sean at the time. And Sean, so every day Sean would pry me out of bed and say, hey, Star, we got to go work. And that really helped me because if you remember my sophomore, junior year, I got a little heavy. And then that summer going into my senior year, I lost like 20 pounds and really was a lot more, you know, just a lot more, you know, 20 pounds helps a lot. It just gave me a lot more energy.
Yeah.
I had a lot more stamina. And then just had a great senior year. I averaged like 14.7 rebounds. Made 13 Big East, which was great because you figure back then it was five guys on a team. I've noticed, you know, here about 5 years ago in the Big East, they would name like 15 guys on first team. So back then it was like Dikembe Mutombo might be first team, Alonzo Mourning might be second team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So make third team.
Yeah.
If I'm a center, you know, throw Derek Coleman and some of those guys in there. So it was
glory days.
I was just happy to get on any team. So I mean, all those things happened, and I, I actually I became the Biggie Scholar Athlete of the Year, and that was nice because the year I was honored, that was when John Thompson was the Coach of the Year. And Coach Thompson was always great to me. Like every time we played him,
yeah.
I think he just appreciated how hard I worked, how hard I tried against those guys, because he knew I was, you know, I'm overmatched against those Mutombo and Alonzo. And so, then, that was just a lot of fun. It was just great. The old Big East was great.
The Big East was great, and a lot of people that are in the ACC now as fans long to have the Big East back.
Yeah.
You know, people talk about that all the time on Paul Zeiss show and this, that, and the other. The Big East was something special, though.
It was great.
I mean, there was a lot of Pearl Washingtons and on and on and on, man. Just Walter Berry.
Chris Mullen.
Yeah, the Big East used to be something special. So speaking of special, you were drafted in 1992 by the Boston Celtics, 47th player overall. Man, that's impressive.
Yeah.
47th player overall.
You know, it's
impressive.
Funny, in the last 10, 15 years, I've been out now almost 26 years on it because I was 92. It's 2018. So it's funny when guys like Chris Taft are coming through or Aaron Gray, and everyone always talks about how these guys are going to be lottery picks. And I think Taft ended up getting drafted like 44th, and I think Aaron got drafted maybe 49th. So it's kind of like, I see people out, and they're like, hey, Star, you were like right there. The one guy I knew for sure, though, that would get drafted probably is a lottery was Steven Adams, just because he was so athletic.
Yeah.
Such a big dude that could really jump. He just had that NBA body.
I was sitting next to a scout in Steven Adams' freshman year. There was a guy in the press row, and there was a guy sitting to the left of me, and he just wasn't overly impressed by Steven Adams. And we were kind of going back and forth, and unbeknownst to me, the guy sitting on the right of me was a scout for somebody. And after about, 10 minutes of hearing this, he leans over me and looks at this guy and says, I guarantee you won't see this kid here much longer, when he was talking about Adams. But the other guy thought he wasn't that impressive. And the scout cleared it up, because I'm saying to this guy, can't you see in 2 years this guy's going to be unbelievable? And this guy leans up and says, you're not going to see him around here that long.
Yeah, just being in the NBA and playing in the Big East and going against the different guys you go against, when you see a guy built like that, if he can do anything, and when he was at Pitt, to be honest, I'd be first to admit, he didn't have a lot of game. You couldn't give him the ball, and he would just go to work.
Right.
I thought they underutilized him, to be honest. I thought they could have gone to him more.
I agree,
But he, I was at Midnight Madness, and I saw him down there, and Bill Rafferty was down, near the student union with Jamie.
Yeah, I remember that.
And, I just had a chance to meet him, and you could just see, man, this guy's an NBA guy. He just had that body.
Well, let's go back to that one NBA guy that was taken ahead of you, a guy named Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
Came out in 92.
Yeah.
He was the first player picked in that draft. So you obviously had a chance to go against him.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's be clear now. You left the Celtics, went on to Dallas Mavericks,
and
spent time with the Utah Jazz. So you were in the NBA how long total?
Off and on for about 3 years.
Okay. So you had a chance to bump elbows with Shaq?
Yeah. I actually started for the Dallas Mavericks for about a half a season. And just so people know the business side of the NBA, most people don't hear the business side. And you've known me, Bill, for a long time. So I'm coming to practice early. I'm lifting weights.
I'm watching
film. I'm doing everything I can to stay on the team. And we were the worst team in basketball. That's a long time ago. I don't know if you followed Dallas Mavericks, but we were on pace to literally lose as many games as anybody ever had in the NBA. So I had non-guaranteed money when I went to their camp. They had three guys that were centers. Sean Rooks, probably remember him.
Yeah,
he since passed away.
Right.
I actually saw him down at Boo Williams tournament here a couple summers ago with my oldest daughter, or my middle daughter. We talked for 2 hours and about a – I don't know, 2 weeks later, he dropped. Yeah. It was just unbelievable. But he was the number one center going to the camp. Then they had a guy named Greg Dreiling. Remember that guy? He's about 7'2".
Right.
From Kansas. And there was another guy named Donald Hodge. So they all had guaranteed money. So I beat them all. Well, I didn't beat Rooks. Rooks got hurt, but I beat the other two. And so I'm starting. The fans like me. The players like me. I was doing everything right. And I was doing pretty good. My field goal percentage was close to 50%. I was, rebounding, doing a good job. And Quinn Buckner was a coach. And I had talked to Quinn. He goes, we're not doing anything with you, and we love you. And it got to be one of those decisions where injury reserve was full. There was nowhere to go, and the guy wanted to save like $100,000, basically, is what it came down to. And I went and met him for 3 hours, the owner. It's the late Don Carter. It was pre-Mark Cuban. And he was a furniture owner. He was this guy that was, you know, like a billionaire furniture owner. And I actually told him, I'll work in your warehouse and load furniture.
Do whatever.
You can pay me to do that. You don't have to pay me to play in the NBA, because I knew once I got let go, it's going to be hard for me to get back up.
Right.
Because I wasn't, you know, I wasn't one of those guys that's just going to, I walk in a gym and it's like, oh, I got to have that guy. So then, to make a long story short, once that all happened, the Eric Musselman, now the Nevada coach, I had the chance to play against him the year before when the Celtics cut me. I ended up in the minor league, and he made like this 8-player trade for me. And I ended up in Rapid City. And to be honest, I wasn't doing much. I was getting kicked out of games right and left because I was mad, because I felt like I deserved to still be in the NBA.
Right.
And he said, "Star, you're killing me." But we were really close. He said, "How can I help you?" And I go, "Get me back in the NBA. I got screwed." And he got a hold of Utah Jazz, and they had liked me, and Jerry Sloan was a coach. And so they gave me a chance, but then I ran into the other part of the business. I was like on 2 10-day contracts. My agent called their brass, and they said, "We like him. We're going to keep him on with the playoffs." And then that was when, if you remember, Carl Malone was bitching about Jeff Malone shooting the ball all the time but not playing defense.
Right.
So they made a trade for Jeff Hornacek, if you remember. Hornacek came in, and Malone went out. Jeff Malone went out with the Philadelphia 76ers, but the Sixers threw one other guy in that they just wanted to get off the payroll. So two came in, one went out, Star got screwed. Because the injury reserve was full there too. So that's a business side the NBA people don't talk about.
Well, and I can echo that because, and I think I shared this story with Kevin, Ron Carter, the former great VMI player that was drafted by the Lakers. Long story short, Connie Hawkins and Kenny Durrett and I went up to Cleveland in the old Richfield Stadium to see the Lakers play the Cavs, and Rhonda left us tickets and the whole bit. And after the game, this is an incredible situation that I was in. After the game, we all go to dinner. So we're at dinner, and at the table is Jerry West, Bill Sharman, Connie Hawkins, Kenny Durrett, and me. And we're waiting for Ron and Norm Nixon to join us. So I'm low man on that totem pole. And before Ron and Norm could get to us, Jerry West told Connie, because, you know, Connie played for the Lakers before he retired from the NBA. Jerry West told Connie, he said, "Hop, next year, Ron Carter and Norm Nixon will be the best backcourt in the NBA.
Is that right?
The next year, they got Magic. And Ron told me he was on his way from L.A. to Indiana. And when he got to Indiana, he was traded. He was a Laker in L.A. He was traded to the Pacers in Indiana. So, and the circumstance really
was... How long
was,
did he stay with Indiana?
I think just 2 years. And the circumstances, and I got this a little bit jumbled up, but the circumstances that caused the trade was the Lakers brought in Ron Boone from Buffalo. And he had the longest playing streak in the NBA. In NBA history, was like 996 games or something. And part of that was they wanted to make sure that he got his consecutive games in. So that was part of the thing, too, because Ron was furious about this. And in 1 minute, you're about to be the next best backcourt in basketball. The next minute, you're traded. So your point is well taken.
Yeah.
So at Pitt, great run, great time, great team, obviously. You guys were strong, great players. You're drafted, but I'm always curious about guys who had a chance to go to the big league. Aside from the business part of it, was it everything you thought it was?
Oh yeah, it was amazing. Like when I was with the Mavericks, I literally was starting. If you look at my thing, it's probably on Google. I think I started like 26 games or something like that. And, you know, you're playing David Robinson, Patrick Ewing, Elijah Wan, Shaq every night.
Damn.
And, I mean, stars, like, out there. Like I was like Rocky Balboa, you know. Like,
holding your own?
I thought I held my own.
Holding your own,
I mean,
right?
One time I tell people I don't know if I can deserve 100% credit for it because he probably took the night off, but I tell people I held Patrick Ewing to a season low that year with 7 points. And the reason I think it's legit is because I played like 36 minutes in the game and I guarded him the whole time.
Right.
But, you know, he's probably taking a night off because we were horrible. So he probably was just going through the motions.
Right.
I was the easiest matchup he was going to have all year. So he probably thought, hey, I'm just going to, like, take a night. So if he wanted to, he probably got 40. But no, tell people, you know me, Bill, if I can tell people and
– Take it.
I take it, right?
Own it. You take own it. You take it and you own it. That's for sure. We're going to just take a quick break in a moment, but – I was also curious about it, going back to what I asked you moments ago. How was it and how difficult was it to play against Shaq? How impossible was that?
He was incredible. The thing that most people don't understand about Shaq when he was in his prime is he was so quick. Like, I went out to the Pete Newell big man camp, and it was like a great big man camp that a lot of the best big guys in the NBA would go to. And the first thing Pete Newell or anybody out there that was in the NBA that were coaches that were there watching – that were blown away by was just Shaq's speed. Shaq was so quick for his size. You know, he's a legitimate 300, and as he got older, he's probably 350.
Yeah.
But he was so quick. And, you know, at the tail end of his career, just the weight and size of him was, you know, that's when those injuries started to happen to him. But when he was, like, you know, probably close to 300, he was really unstoppable because mm-hmm. he was so big and strong and so quick that there's really nothing you could do with him.
Toughest guy you faced?
You know, actually, the toughest guys I tell people I always faced was guys like Sean Kemp or Olajuwon or David Robinson because they were so quick. You know, guys like Shaq, for me, I could kind of hold them. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm still in trouble.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at least I could hold them a little bit.
Yeah.
With guys like Kemp, you know, I remember one time in Seattle, and I'm from out there, so I was playing in front of all my hometown family and friends. He beat me so bad. And Quinn was our coach, and I was really good friends with Derek Harper, if you remember him.
Sure.
And I said, Derek, why the hell won't Quinn bring a double down here to help me with Kemp? And he just started laughing. He's like, I don't know, Star. I mean, I don't know. He's just laughing, you know.
The Rain Man.
Next time down the court, he spun on me so fast, Bill, that I literally swiped at him because I didn't want to be embarrassed and get dunked on.
Yeah.
I swiped at him as hard as I could, and I missed him. And he still dunked it. Like, I literally couldn't catch him. Like, he spun that quick. I was like, where do you go?
Well, to your point.
So those are the hard matchups. Then Robinson, you know, he'd get you from 15 feet.
Yeah.
And he could shoot the jumper. So you had to play up on him enough. But if you played up on him an inch too much, he'd just kill you, you know, because he was so quick.
You know, and to your point about the quickness of the game and the talent and the athleticism, for those, you know, you'll hear, especially around here, people talk about the NBA isn't this or that or they don't play defense. And I always tell people this. Go to a game
and sit close
and see how ridiculous you sound.
It's ridiculous.
Because these guys are so incredibly talented, so athletic, that on TV it may look to you like they're not playing hard.
And sit close.
Yeah, but
if you sit close enough, those guys are flying. Those guys are way over the rim and they're so strong.
It's a different world.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And I've always said the clearly, and it's arguable, but the most gifted athletes on the planet, basketball players, maybe hockey. Some people, I mean, skating backwards can't be easy, but to have to do all the things you have to do to play basketball in a second, forward, backward, sideways.
I hadn't been to a game for a long time. I told you before we got on, I went to two Cavalier games here not too long, just because I wanted to kind of see LeBron, thinking, hey, he might not be there or he might retire at some point. Want to see him live. It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's just incredible how fast and athletic these guys are.
Well, look, we're going to take a break, come right back. I want to get your opinion about the new Pitt hire.
Absolutely.
And a couple other things. And
some NBA.
And then get his opinion on the NBA. Well, the playoffs are here.
Yeah,
and we'll talk about that.
Let's do it.
We'll be right back in a moment with Soul Take Champions Live.
Looking for some magic? Urban Media Today Radio, for the very best in adult and urban music. Listen to us on our app at TuneIn or Live 365. Urban Media Today features great music, entertainment updates, HBCU sports, breakfast toast and jams mixes for your morning wake up, and sports. Like us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, and register to win prizes on a weekly basis. All right here on Urban Media Today Radio.